This week's episode of the Godfathers of Podcasting is dedicated to the family of Dante Wright. This completely avoidable tragedy never should have happened. And until we hold our peacemakers and lawmakers to a higher level of accountability, nothing will change. Let your voice be heard. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 51st installment of the Godfathers of Podcasting. You know, we've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. The video version of this show is available on our website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. You can grab the audio version on any major podcast provider. Please like and subscribe on whatever app you use to help get that algorithm moving. When you visit our website, godfathersofpodcasting.com, check out our merchandise. We've got hoodies, tees, tanks, hats, all kinds of accessories with a whole bunch of different designs. More are coming. The quality is fantastic. Your satisfaction on all of our products is guaranteed. Go check it out, godfathersofpodcasting.com. My name is Donnie DeSilva, and it is my distinct honor to welcome the Frank Gallagher and Mickey Milkovich to my Kevin Ball. Here is notorious TID Chris Tidwell and a guy who doesn't understand that reference, your bro Danny O.
What's up, man?
Wow. I thought you were going to say reference to Kevin's balls or whatever, but I mean,
which have been seen many times on that show.
I mean, clearly in this instance with the two of us, I get to be Malkovich for this one, right?
Gotcha. In honor of the final episode of Shameless this past
week. Dude, I'm not ready to watch it yet. I haven't had time, first of all. I haven't had time, first of all, because I need to make this a special occasion. So I'm thinking it's going to be like in the bathtub, like, you know, with some candles and a glass of wine and, like, you know.
Okay. Wow.
You're going to romance
yourself.
You're
really in love. You are romancing this show.
I did the same thing with Oz, and Seinfeld and MASH.
Wow.
And Golden Girls.
That's my favorite show.
Nobody shed a tear over the finale of Golden Girls.
And
Golden
Simpsons.
Girls was dope. Don't sleep.
It was dope, but everyone was happy the show ended before they all died. Come on.
Yeah, fair enough.
Come on.
Listen, it's important we touch on this real quick, guys, or not real quick, but like when an episode begins without a diatribe about all the different things that are related to the number of our episode, you know that this has been a tough week. And it obviously is one. Dante Wright, unfortunately, is only one name on a list of names of people of color who have been accosted, in his case, sadly, murdered. By either the police or members of the white community are still yet to show the kind of respect to their fellow human beings that they should. And you guys know how I feel about this kind of stuff. I know how you guys feel about this kind of stuff. And I know we talked off air about trying to, you know, bring something to our audience that's somewhat different, new, or unique. And it's tough because we continue to deal with the same type of thing over and over. And it's horrible to see the hatred that continues to exist. But for my part, as you know, a representation or a representative of the Godfathers of Podcasting, I want to ask everybody out there to do their part to try and seek a different stance on things that you may not have had before. In other words, there's always a lot of excuse makers out there. There's people who believe in the excuse that the cop thought it was a taser instead of a gun. There's people who believe that young guy, I believe it's in South Carolina, didn't deserve to be in the neighborhood where that army lieutenant dude tried to, you know, bully him.
Cost him.
There are people who believe that, you know, the United States trooper who was pulled over by the cops and berated, you know, should have complied. There's always the excuse makers. And if you could take it for a second, take the color out of it, because I know it's the color that's blinding you from reality. And it's your racism, whether implicit or explicit, that's not allowing you to simply say you can be pro cop, but also hold cops accountable. It actually helps your cause and it strengthens your point when you say we have to support our police force, but in instances when such wrong is being committed, those cops need to be held accountable so that we don't continue to have such completely opposite sides of the story, one saying all cops are bad and the other saying cops can do no wrong. because it's insane some of the excuses that are being made out there. And I think the insult to injury for me as a person who continues to see video footage of things that are happening is to be continually told that what I saw in the video didn't actually happen. And I have a perspective other than what is real. Seriously, seek the humanity within you people and stop looking at things through blinders. There is obviously wrong in what we're seeing on a consistent basis.
Go ahead,
Tim. There is a certain set of standards that we as humans in society should hold certain professions to.
Yes.
We can all agree upon that, right? Yeah. And it's not a very large handful. Like, mm-hmm. I don't hold you to a certain standard if you work in, you know, a arboretum or you work at a donut shop, but I will hold you to a certain standard if you are a doctor.
Sure, for sure.
If you are a fireman,
mm-hmm.
if you are a lawyer,
wow,
most definitely. You know what I mean? If you
basically what you're getting at is the people you expect to know better. That's what you're
you expect
at.
Them to know better.
100%. Because their actions have implications on our lives.
On everybody's lives, not just right. their own because of the job they're doing, but on everybody that they're supposed to be serving for, that they're right. supposed to be doing the job for.
Yes.
The job isn't for themselves. They're not an artist. An artist's job is for themselves. If you think that you're going to have that, go be an artist. But mm-hmm. as soon as you take one of these jobs, your job is to produce a certain lifestyle that other people are accustomed to safely.
Yes, it can benefit from your work.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as you give up on that job you're doing, you do not deserve to have that job anymore. You also do not deserve to have the protection
yes,
of that job, of that job when certain things may, because I understand that accidents, just like in regular life, may occur. But you cannot hide behind those the protection of the job. As a human, when those things happen, you have to take responsibility for it. And too many times in the past, too many people have not taken responsibility for their own actions as a human,
right?
Let alone the job that they're doing.
Yes, sir, man.
So in the Dante Wright case, facts are coming in, you know, sporadically. There's a lot of bad information that's out there. There's a lot of conflicting yeah. information that's out there. Here's what we do know. The officer who was at the center of this horrible tragedy, Kim Potter, did immediately resign from the police force. So she apparently does not intend to be one of those who hides behind the badge in order to claim immunity in this particular case. There's mm-hmm. been conflicting reports that I've seen on what her intentions are, on whether or not she plans to plead guilty or not. That all being said, I think a big part of the narrative that's out there is focusing on the wrong part. Like, there are people that are coming forth, character witnesses say, I know Kim Potter. She's not a racist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe that's true. Maybe. But the fact that Dante Wright was pulled over, why was he pulled over, right? And even that, there was conflicting stories on what the real reason is. Apparently, the real reason he was pulled over was expired tags on his plate. I can't speak for what's going on in Minneapolis. I know here in this country right now, you don't get pulled over for expired tags because the government right. and the cops have spoken and said, fuck it. Nobody should be going out to the government offices to get their tags renewed because COVID is fucking everybody up. So
yeah.
don't worry about it. Immunity for everybody. Immunity.
Yeah. That reminds me, my tags are expired.
That's not the rule clearly in Minneapolis,
right.
but it's definitely something that could have been overlooked. I also have conflicting feelings on if a person tries to resist arrest because they're scared, why are you chasing them? If you feel that they are a dangerous criminal, danger to society, and they have to be stopped at all odds, and you finally got your hands on them, okay, fine. Do whatever it takes to restrain, arrest, take in that person. From everything that I've seen, this 130-pound
right
boy was not a physical threat to three police officers.
He was running away.
Right.
He was scared. There's a phone call where he was calling his mom saying, I got pulled over. I'm going to die. You know, he's scared. The warrant that was out for his arrest, which he never received the date with the court information for, the warrant was for apparently having a pistol without a license and then fleeing from police officers. So then people go, see, he's a criminal. He deserved it. Well, first of all, even if that's all accurate, first, innocent till proven guilty. Secondly, even if that's all accurate, you don't deserve to die.
Oh, he ran. He was scared.
And he's scared. And when you think about it, why is a young black man in Minneapolis, Minnesota, carrying an unregistered weapon and running from cops? Let's try to do the math. The reason is it's all connected. It's all a piece of this whole systemic problem. Okay. And then when you talk about the systemic racism, when people take photos of Kim Potter when she was a 22-year-old rookie on the force and trying to make her seem like a young, innocent kid, but she's 26 years a police officer.
Right.
Okay. And she was training. She's a field trainer.
Yeah.
And this is a whole other part, because when the George Floyd incident happened, part of my rant was better training, better education, defund the police and reorganize the educational strategies. If the woman who trains can legitimately in her heart say, I grabbed the wrong piece, instead of my firearm, I meant to grab my taser, and I didn't. And then in the moment, like when I watch the video, I'm going 1-1,000.
Yeah.
2-1,000. 3, when's she going to notice what she's holding? 4-1,000. And it doesn't happen. So I'm like, okay, she may be responsible for training, but clearly their training is flawed. They're not doing high pressure training. They're not doing real live simulations with stress and pressure. It's textbook training, which does nothing to simulate a situation. She could have been on the force 26 years and never touched her firearm once. Entirely possible.
Yeah, it's insane how often we hear that these cops feared for their lives. I mean, the job that you're doing technically puts you in harm's way at any given moment. So to your point, Don, if you haven't been trained for that, it seems like these cops who consistently make these so-called mistakes continually run to the excuse about being afraid for their lives. And obviously, there's so many incidents where you couldn't have possibly been afraid for your life, because this is one of them. The boy was clearly outnumbered. We're calling him a boy. He was 20 years old, but he was certainly small in stature. Young and in no way a physical threat to anyone. To Tid's point, he was scared and he was running away. As well, that taser is bright yellow, firearm is black. I've learned that there are different weights, different feels in the grip. I don't buy it, to be honest with you. And
listen, when I watch the video and I hear the sound of former officer Potter's voice, I shot him. Like, she sounds legitimately remorseful and freaked out and like regretful, but that's all irrelevant. It's all immaterial. This whole thing about, well, it was an accident.
Yeah.
It's all immaterial.
Yeah.
You were never supposed to be in that situation. Here's a sports analogy. When someone wants to yell at the player for missing the last shot at the game, you never should have been in that situation. Okay. Mm. And I know it's a very glib and poor metaphor to use when you're talking about death, but what I'm saying is they never should have been in that situation. They pulled him over for something that didn't need to be addressed in that moment. They didn't need to escalate it the way it did. And you know what? At the end of the day, the warrant that they were arresting him for was issued in error because he never got his court notice.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many pieces here that are just fucking wrong.
Yeah. The whole thing is a travesty of errors, and it seems like that Minneapolis Police Department is like the Chernobyl of police departments. It's like the Florida of cops.
Like, does anyone want to be police chief in Minneapolis?
You know what I mean? It is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, you talk about travesties not only inside of the police stations. When you were talking about it a second ago, Donnie, you were talking about sports analogies, and it made me think about like some ridiculous things that, you know, sports teams actually have done over the years. And, you know, obviously one of the most iconic ones that keeps coming up is the fact that like the Yankees with their, you know,
can I tell you how glad I am you brought that up? I have to say, real talk, I have to.
It's a hell of a segue, too.
It's see what it's, I do for my boy here?
It is a crazy segue. But speaking on behalf of three beard bands on this show.
We could never play for the Yankees.
Oh, guy, I am waiting for the guy. I don't know if David Price was ever offered a contract, but to my knowledge, he's the only player who actually spoke out and said he wouldn't sign with them. Why in the year why in any year should a grown man shave his face to play baseball? I hate the New York Yankees for so many reasons, and that's another one of them. I don't like Rougned Odor, but the guy.
But they're not. To have listen,
you, can, you know.
Listen, it hasn't.
Anyways, the beard to shaving wasn't going to help.
It hasn't just been the Yankees, though. If you think about it, like what Don Mattingly, you know, who was a Yankee, who went over and what was it? That was the big Simpsons episode. Remember that one?
Yeah, back
in the day. No, shave those sideburns, Mattingly. That was the whole big joke because it was they were coming down too much in his face. But he implemented the same exact rule when he became coach over at the Marlins or something like that.
Dude, I don't get it.
So, hold on. Let me just pause. For anyone out there who's not a sports fan, anyone who's going, what the fuck are they talking about?
Sorry, yes.
Well,
let me just rewind. The New York Yankees have an official team policy that they've had for over 100 years. Who's echoing, by the way?
Someone's echoing.
Me?
Am I?
You're not wearing headphones, man. Where's your headphones?
They're broken.
You're ruining the whole show, asshole. Get some headphones. I'm gonna mute you till you get some headphones.
That's amazing. Continue with your story. Tell the people.
The New York Yankees have a policy that's been there for like over 100 years. All players, coaches, and male executives are forbidden to have any facial hair other than mustaches. And then there is an addendum, except for religious reasons. And scalp hair may not grow below the collar.
Right.
So you can't be a long hair man. You can have a mustache. You can have a big push broom up there, but you can't have a beard. And like, I don't know who said it. I think it was Tid that said it. Years ago, this was like the thing with cops and firefighters and different civil servants. And they've all abandoned that years ago. And it's so funny to me that in the year 2021, the fucking New York Yankees still have this archaic thing. Like what? If you have a beard or if you have a hair that goes down to your shoulders, then you're a thug or you're not an upstanding member of the Yankees family. It's so bizarre to me.
But I mean, they have crazy things. Like there's lists out there that anybody can look up, and they have crazy rituals inside of, you know, certain teams and stuff like that. Like the whole don't walk on the logo, you know, inside of the locker room thing. There's certain teams that if like in the NFL, they set a weight, and if you're over that weight, it's like $600 a pound or something overweight that you have to pay. Like there's certain,
Those things affect performance. They affect morale. Right. They affect whatever. I get all that.
For the longest time, the PGA had an unwritten rule where if you had a tattoo, make sure that some bitch don't show no place.
Right.
Ever.
Sure.
Beard thing is the dumbest thing in sports.
I mean, we all remember, well, not all, but I mean, many of us remember, I remember very well when LeBron James was in high school and he had to have stickers covering all his tattoos because back in those days they weren't allowed to have tattoos.
So stickers was the preference.
Yeah, cover his tattoos with stickers because teenagers couldn't have tattoos on display. Wow. So now that one I can almost understand to a certain extent. First of all, you're not legally allowed to get a tattoo if you're under the age of 18. So that's one part. The other part is a tattoo could potentially have offensive imagery, offensive language. So to a certain extent, I get all that. A beard? Long hair? Come on.
Dude, if we're going to talk about offensive tattoos and imagery and stuff like that, the NFL, okay, yeah. I wouldn't have so many jerseys of people that were actual convicted murderers that played in the NFL as I do. Aaron Hernandez was covered in gangland tattoos. And if y'all didn't know and pick up on what he was into and his side projects, that's on y'all.
Another interesting, since we transitioned, we took a hard right turn and went right into a sports story. Here's another interesting one that broke earlier today. Shocked a lot of people. LaMarcus Aldridge, former NBA All-Star, announced his retirement from the NBA today, just several weeks after he was bought out by the San Antonio Spurs at his behest and joined the Brooklyn Nets in search of his first championship ring.
Sure.
Apparently, he missed his last game due to a discovered heart condition, and he put out this heartfelt message today on social media where basically he said, you know what? It is time for me to step away and focus on my health and my family. And that's what I'm going to do. Really, really interesting story. I know here in the city that we broadcast from, Toronto, a lot of Toronto fans have had a love-hate relationship, not by any of his own doing, but like everyone remembers when he was drafted back in 06. And it's like everyone in Toronto wanted the Raptors to draft LaMarcus Aldridge. In fact, they decided to draft Andrea Bargnani. Yeah. And then when LaMarcus Aldridge was a free agent, he left the Portland Trail Blazers and he ended up signing with the San Antonio Spurs. Many people have forgotten this already, but it came down to two teams. It came down to the Spurs and the Raptors. And he has said many times he almost chose Toronto, but he didn't. And there you go. So, and Toronto was apparently one of the teams that were being considered during his buyout. But, I mean, Toronto had just fallen so far out of the contention picture.
Yeah.
He decided.
Are
to
you
go.
Saying that his condition came from not choosing Toronto?
Totally. Totally. No. Interesting, though, just to put a cap on it, he's one of those guys that's kind of a bubble. Like, does he make the Hall of Fame based on his body of work? Definitely he's going to go down in history as one of the best mid-range shooting bigs of all time. But he's one of those guys that from the time he came into the league to today, the whole league changed and passed him by. Like his game just did not age well.
This didn't just happen overnight. This is clearly something that he's been dealing with for
heart condition.
While,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so this is, he's had incidents along the way, and then obviously something big enough happened to make him go, whoa, that's enough, right?
Right.
But he's been dealing with this and not saying anything to anybody. So like,
I'm sure
that's what a fucking stud, man.
Yeah.
Thank God that this decision was made prior to anything happening, you know, on the court or off, that would record, you know, obviously would be an extremely scary situation, man. When you're an athlete,
man,
and I know I don't have to say this to athletes, but sometimes that, you know, that I don't want to quit, I don't want to give up thing gets in your head. And it's like, I'm thankful that he was able to say he could step down before, you know, putting the quest for a championship ring over his health.
So 19 points, 8 rebounds for his career. He's a 7-time All-Star. There's not many 7-time All-Stars that are not in the Hall of Fame, but his counting stats don't really jump off the page. A lot of that is because the last few years in San Antonio, he was used differently than he was at the start of his career in Portland. Because Popovich does his own shit. So it'll be really interesting. I think he probably gets into the Hall of Fame, just not right away. Mm-hmm. But great career for LaMarcus Aldridge. And I hope he is able to enjoy with his family and move on to the next phase of life.
For sure.
Another interesting story that broke this past week. It's two stories that are music related.
Your segues suck.
One of them is a little bit more somber, so I'm going to get to that in a second. But this one really
Ted, you got to take those, man.
You can both shut the fuck up. This one really surprised me. And I don't know if, I think Ted might have an opinion on this, but Pete Davidson.
What? No.
Pete Davidson, the cast member from Saturday Night Live, stand-up comic.
Best friend.
Really, had a really good movie last year, King of Staten Island.
Staten Island, yeah.
And really good film. He has been cast in the biopic, in a new biopic where he's going to be playing Joey Ramone. And I find that a really interesting casting choice.
Is it?
I think
Is it really? I mean, because think about it. Think about here's the thing. We live in a day and age. Like I heard about this news and I thought, yeah, I thought like yourself, like maybe this is kind of weird, but it's not really about what they have when you see them walking down the street. It's what you're able to do with them as a prop. And that's what these movie people are looking at right now, right? They can put a wig on him, but you can have those. It's the facial structure that he has that they're looking for. They can shadow it. They can light it. They can do the thing. His work in King of Staten Island was fantastic. And as we forget his bestie, you know, his Brokeback Mountain bestie in Machine Gun Kelly was Tommy Lee, for God's sakes. You know what I mean? In the Motley Crue movie. And you didn't even realize it until like halfway through, or even not at all until afterwards. Mm-hmm. So it's never, because you were looking and go, wait, that was what? Who? What? Yeah. No way. Huh? You know? So it's not necessarily about what we think in our minds, because we don't have that job. But then when we look at it, we're like, ah, you sneaky sons of bitches, you pulled one over on us. So I'm excited to see how they pull it off, because, you know, trying to play the Ramones is going to be a little crazy, especially, you know, when there's Maki Ramone on Sirius XM telling everybody about, this is the song that I played the drums on.
Well, I think it's respect actors who are able to make that transition from, especially from comedy to drama. I mean, you got guys like Tom Hanks who built a career on that. I think we forget sometimes that he was part of those hokey 80s comedies. And, you know, I've heard so often, especially like from other actors, how a lot of the best comedy is rooted in tragedy, you know, making light of bad stuff. So it's interesting how people who usually play funny are able to tap into things that are a little bit darker. Not to say that the Ramon story will be, you know, like, I'm just saying that someone like Pete Davidson that you might assume is an SNL, you know, quirky dude.
Look at what Sandler did. Perfect
guy to play him outside Look
at what Sandler did in that, the jewelry?
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems, so you know what I mean?
That's a great
everybody
point.
Was like, oh my God, Sandler's so good.
I feel the same way about Bryan Cranston. I remember when he was cast in Breaking Bad, all I could think about was Malcolm in the Middle. And
we talked about that when Larry Hankin was on this show, and we said almost everyone on Breaking Bad, universally regarded as one of the greatest television dramas of all time. For almost sure. Every single principal character on that show is a comedic actor.
Yeah.
Right.
That's true.
So, you know, Bob Odenkirk, man.
Bob Odenkirk. Like, yeah. I was just going to say,
like, the king of comedy.
It is tough. But tough to love
make people laugh. You know what I mean? You come from being able to work and read the crowds and do your acting chops and everything like that. But then to go out there and to be known as somebody who, hey, this is my job to consistently make you laugh. Mm-hmm. That's a lot tougher and a lot more pressure than people think. So when they come out with a gem like Sandler did, you know what I mean? Or let's hopefully, you know, like Davidson's going to do on this one, man, I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting only because Pete Davidson often talks in interviews and says, I'm the guy who's like an extra. I'm the pizza guy in the movie, or I'm the best friend of the best friend. I'm never the guy, you know, and now he's got this epic role. Even King of Staten Island, he was essentially just playing himself. So, you know,
if I'm wrong, his real life is, you know, is not the easiest.
Crazy.
He's dealt with some stuff. So, I mean, if he's, you know, what I think he is in terms of what he uses for his acting, he'll be able to knock this out, man.
Yeah. Drugs.
Ariana Grande. Him. That, well, you know what I mean?
And like right. Joey Ramone, both very bitter about being jilted by former lovers. And
yeah,
that, both there's like my to, point. There you
both,
go.
Both were dark personalities.
Gonna, I think this is going to be dope.
Yeah.
Who's going to play the other roles? That's what I'm excited about.
I want to hear, but it's going to be definitely interesting to see. Our guest is going to be joining us momentarily. Tid, you have a list you want to share?
Oh, Jesus. I was just talking about there was very quickly. I don't even know. Wow, you're going to put me on the spot like that. It was a list. It was just a list of when we were talking about the sports stuff. That's all.
Oh, my bad. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then,
yeah, you're bad,
talking
for sure.
About music stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, I think and then you were going to bring up music for sure because we have to mention because of last week and now this week. Please, Dan.
Well, yes, of course. You know, we sadly brought it up this week and sadly have to discuss this week the unfortunate passing of another soldier in the world of hip hop. You know, last week, you know, Tid, we were talking about DMX sharing some stories, some memories, some, you know, just words about someone who was highly influential in the game. And it really does suck. You know, I know I talked to you guys a little bit off air about this concept of the powerlessness of prayer. And this is not to shit on religious belief, but no. I remember Donnie and I had this conversation at a funeral of a mutual friend, and people were praying over him. And I couldn't help but feel this sense of like loss, not just his loss, but like being lost in that. We pray, and it doesn't matter what your belief system are, it is, you know, and we all have different beliefs and stuff, but it is something that I find so tough are these situations where, like with DMX, how he's in a hospital for a week, you know, on life support, and everyone's sending their prayers, and everyone is praying, and the prayers aren't answered. And I know this is way too big a topic to wrap up in a couple of minutes, but I'm curious to know your thoughts on how to deal with these types of passings, because all passings at some point or the other, I mean, they're tragic. He's 50 years old. You know what I'm saying? He dealt with a lot of stuff, but I just wish there were more examples of prayer working. And I wish this was one of them. I don't know how, I'm freestyling my thoughts out there. Cause I felt really.
Dan, you know me, and you know, when it comes to my love affair with my own faith,
yes,
that it changes. Oh my God, your echo is killing me, bro. It changes from, you know, moment to moment, story to story, whatever it may be. In this particular case, I get it. You know, everyone was saying, you know, pray for DMX, pray for a miracle. However, let's just put things in perspective. He was 50 years old. Mm-hmm. He's regarded as, you know, one of the greatest in his genre of all time. And if you look at his story, where he was born, where he was raised, what he went through, it was kind of a miracle he got to where he did. It was kind of a miracle he lived to be old enough to even produce an album. You know, when you hear stories about his aunt giving him vodka when he was a toddler and getting him all fucked up, like he could have died of alcohol poisoning as a child. Like, you know, and just the shit that he went through. And I'm not saying like, well, it's good enough. He had a good run. Like, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, you know, we all want prayer to work the way we want it to work. And it doesn't it's not binary. It doesn't always work the way we want it to work. It may have already done its job. You know, it's like one of those episodes of Family Guy when you see the Grim Reaper and it's like, what, you're here for me now? It's like, yeah, bro, you're out of time. Like, I know you thought you had more, but nah, you've already had your extra chances. You know, and I think about it for myself. Mm-hmm. I know I've had many, many, many close calls over the years where it's like, that could have been it. I could have punched my ticket right there. And I know for both of you, it's the same thing. You know, Tid, you talked about in the interview with Silken Lauman, when you had that serious accident, that shit could have killed you.
100%. You know?
And, 100%. You know, we've all been blessed, but it's easy to look at things when things don't go the way we want, when we're praying with intent,
right?
And it doesn't go the way we want. And then we say, well, where are you now?
Right.
Fuck prayer. Well, maybe prayer already did its job for that person. Maybe they've already been given their extra chance.
I like that perspective. That helps me. Not even joking, Don, because that is a helpful way to look at it. Because it is all the way you look at it. It's all the way that you perceive the purpose of prayer. And that is a better way of looking at it. I certainly hope that the age-old cliche is true. I hope he's in a better place, at rest, at peace, and without pain.
Listen, why don't we talk about... DMX and this exact conversation, and we can carry it over because our guest joins us now. So ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the big hello. And hey, let me just say, when people talk about Canadian hip hop legends, you often hear names like Maestro Fresh West, Shot Clair, Cardinal, Mishy Me, Eternia, Drake, my bro Danny O, and many others. But a name that's always on that list is this week's guest. He's graced the stage with iconic names like Chris Brown, Kanye West, Snoop Dogg, and Nas. Outside the music world, I can tell you, he digs Jackie Chan, he was feeling the Snyder Cut, and like my co-host, Notorious T.I.D., he's a fucking Eagles fan. And I can tell you, this week's guest, he hates when people try to chat you up when the TV's on, and he recently learned that fried chicken for breakfast is a bad idea, though I personally refuse to buy into that notion until I try it myself. If you've heard his music on one of my favorite TV shows, Kim Convenience, then bless yourself, and some of his tracks have been hailed up as true summer anthems. Ladies and gentlemen, the lyrical acrobat, the man who's been asking for rum and coke since grade two, this is Rochester, a.k.a. Juice.
That's good, man.
I'm not clapping for myself. I'm clapping for that intro, man. That was... Thank you so much, man.
It all
thank
downhill you. From here, bro. That's how he does it.
Yeah, no pressure. Beautiful. Be good.
I gotta ask you this. I gotta ask you this right off the hop, okay? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Because I've heard your music since Time. You got an album that came out recently. All kinds of stuff going on. But, bro, I cannot get my head around. Is it Rochester, all caps, or is it Rochester, a.k.a. Juice? Or, like, I'm hearing both. I saw an interview you did a few years ago where you said, nah, I dropped the Juice piece. And then Dan's like, nah, man, his new album's called a.k.a. Juice. So obviously he's still rocking with that shit. So I don't know, legit. What do I fucking, I'm just going to call you a.k.a. Like, I don't even know.
No. Okay, here, let me break it down. I get it. Okay. My original name was Juice. This is the name that I've grown up with. As you said in the intro, I've been asking for rum and coke since I was about 6 years old. Right? My dad used to own a bar, a Domino bar, in Rexdale. So every day after school, I would go there. I'd go straight to the bar. I'd put down my backpack, and I would ask for a rum and coke, right? The bartender would say, get out of here, you little kid. Here's some orange juice or some juice. So the name Juice stuck. So this is from 6 years old. As I started to become a rapper now, there were so many juices, man. There was just this juice, that juice. Everybody had juice. So, right? So I was like, I can't just call myself Juice, right? So what could I do that's authentically me? So I said, I'm going to be Rochester, a.k.a. Juice, which is my actual last name, right? But man, I'm a big man now, and you know what I'm saying? I've grown a lot in the industry, right? So I decided to drop the AKA and just stick with Rochester. But this is how I differentiate people who know me from when they know me, right? If you call me Juice, like Daniel calls me Juice, he knows from day one,
yeah, man,
I'm Juice. If you call me Rochester, you might have just got on to Dreams Don't Have Deadline and just figured it out. You know what I'm saying? And you might just go and check my music now. So that's usually how I know how long somebody knows me by the name.
It's kind of a good thing, bro, because it helps you to discern between, you know, how people know you, how long people known you, and you get to categorize them as such, because you probably have this happen a lot. There's a lot of people that bump into you, hail you up or whatever, and you can't really remember them. And I'm able to tell if they know me, if they call me Dan or Danny. Call me Dan, you're my red legend from Time. If you call me Danny, you don't know who the fuck I am.
Or my other favorite one, not just Danny, because a lot of people hear Danny O and they think it's Danny O.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So they'll call him Danny because they're trying to relate. Yo, Danny.
Oh,
The other one that makes
me, I hate it, bro.
The other one that kills me with laughter every single time. Like, let's say it's like Dan's birthday, which is coming up soon. It's Dan's birthday. Social media is up, right? And on his social media, it'll say Daniel because he goes all formal, right? Because it's like the acting shit. So it'll say Daniel. So then when you see people go, happy birthday, Daniel, they never met him once.
No. Hold up.
They might be Facebook friends.
Right? Hold up, Juice. Tell me if this is true for you too, bro, because you're wrong on that, Donnie. Daniel is the galem thing. If a girl is calling me Daniel, she, you know what I'm saying? I've never, to this day, if I met you for the first time and you're a dude, I'm like, what up, man? I'm Dan. If you're a woman, yeah. I'm like, I'm Daniel. How are you?
The weakest
don't
move
watch
ever.
That, bro. Yeah, check the gender yeah. first.
No, that's
a
true.
Man
that's...
calling me Daniel now, you have to watch out.
Can you mm-hmm. imagine when Tid was a single guy?
I'm with
if
you.
If he had walked up to a girl at the bar and said, "Hi, I'm Christopher,"
that shit never yeah, though, that's, see, this is the thing. Like, I get vexed when people like call me Chris. I'm like, who the fuck are you talking to right now? Because like, everybody knows me over years as Tid. Right. Like, outside of my wife and my mother, like, that's pretty much it, right? Like, everybody calls me Tid, so that's what I answer to.
Now,
see, so you guys get that the fact that, you know, this is how you differentiate stuff, right? Chris,
right?
Tid, Danny, Daniel, even girlfriends, they'll call me Jay, right? For Jason, right? So if you're calling me Jay, we might be closer than
right. You and right. you know. And if you can't remember,
that's an intimate knowledge.
Hey, guy. Yeah. If you can't remember the gal now, and she's calling you Jay, you're like, oh, this girl must know me still. You know, which one was this again? Because I get the Dan. I get the Dan sometime from people I can't remember. I'm like, yo. She must know me.
Yeah. Anyway,
you know,
those are called bill collectors, Dan.
My favorite part of Rochester's story about you know, being a young man and hanging out at his dad's bar, and they go, hey Juice, some youngsters today seem to have lost this notion that you don't give yourself a nickname,
right?
Nicknames right. are bestowed upon you. Thank if you right. give yourself a nickname, you deserve a slap. Like, let me tell you something. My bro right there, Chris Tidwell, this is a true what? Story for anyone who's never heard this story. We were doing a radio show together way back in 1996. And one day, just off the top of the head, I don't know why I said this. You know, everyone used to call him Tid, short for Tidwell. And one day off the top, I just said, I'm joined by the notorious TID, and he looks at me and goes, don't ever fucking call me that again. And I was like,
is that where it came from for real this whole time?
Yeah, legit. Yeah, legit.
And he goes, don't ever call me that again. And then shortly after that, Tid became
fans started flooding in.
Fans bought into it right away, and they started throwing it around. And then Tid became a pro wrestler. And he had his first match. He had his first match, and his name was Pipe. The worst fucking name ever, Pipe. And I'm like, why the fuck are you? You should be notorious.
My guy, in the Caribbean community, that's a whole next thing.
Right? I'm just saying.
It's not as bad as you think it is. I don't know.
Right? It depends on what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm like, bro, you should be the notorious TID. I guess, but... More than 20 years later, he's still the notorious TID because nicknames are given to you. Juice.
You know, this makes me think of something, man. It all comes down to branding and how you brand yourself as an artist, as a performer, what have you. And I want to ask you about something, bro, because you've probably gone through this as well. You're a veteran in the game, dog. And I've been around a long time as well. And in all this time, you get a lot of advice, what you should do, what you shouldn't do, the beats you should rock on, the artists you should fuck with, and all of that stuff. And I'm a lyrics man, so I like to listen to lyrics. I like to write lyrics. And you have bars, bro. But I find one of the things that stuck out to me when I peeped one of my favorite joints of yours, Last of the Mohicans, is you make a statement where you say, focus on the brand, not the lyrics.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that's part and parcel of the advice you've been given, or is that the advice you're giving? Because mans can be lyricists, and that doesn't mean give up on your lyricism. But what is it that artists need to do to push their brand so that they find the success that so many independent artists don't?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's important to be well-rounded. But I think the whole point of that bar was just to show that you need to be more than one thing. You know what I'm saying? You have to have the full package. People maybe focus on one part of it. Some artists, they focus on dressing well. You know what I'm saying? And not much about the lyricism in their songs. It's more about the aesthetic of how they look and how they portray themselves. You know what I mean? The antics they can put out, right? If that's you, go ahead. But some artists, they're just trying to out-rap every single, they're trying to out-rap themselves, right? And then they forget about that you're making music. You know what I'm saying? Because you can be as lyrical as you want, but at the end of the day, you're making music, right? So it's gotta, you gotta feel it. It's gotta make you move. So all the intricacies of your bars that people, that only like, you know, the real heads are gonna catch, that's cool. But what is that really, like, you're missing the point of making a song.
So I was that guy. Me, I know.
You can. I've gone there too. I have there too, right? Where you're sitting at a bar and you're like, there's too many syllables in that. I should have used a different word. I shouldn't have blah, 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 blah. But then you have to find, like I would say, like when you're making music, right? You leave the door open for you know, let God in, man, and let him help you write the song, yo, because sitting down and writing your lyric till it's perfect and going and spitting it is like, that's one thing, but you have to let the energy come to you. And there's always something about that freedom of like not even knowing what the next line is or where you're absolutely going with a song and having it come to you in that instance, right? Mm-hmm. Those are the best records you're gonna have. Yeah. It's the ones that you didn't even know what's happening, right? That's why I think the mumble rap, it had a good idea, right? Going in there and not knowing what you're doing, it just, and then turning that into something leaves room for God to come in and give you something that you might have never thought of before, right? Yeah, they got lazy with it, I would say, you know what I'm saying, a little bit. You utilize that too much, but it was really what I was trying to say is just find a balance in all of it.
I can relate, because as my bro Danny O will tell you, I've been writing my debut hip hop album for 17 years. So finding those right words is a challenge. I'm still working on it, but I've got a soft 16 that's ready to kick. Now
he means millimeters.
I want to rewind a quick second, because
that was a water spitter almost.
I want to rewind a quick second, because I was going to segue to a different topic, and then my bro jumped in with something totally on a different note. But we were talking about nicknames, and we were talking about the power of nicknames and all that. And I wanted to just transition to the topic at hand before you joined us, Rochester, which was, we were talking about a man whose nickname was handed to him, despite things you might read on Wikipedia. Okay. DMX, you know,
the Dark Man himself.
Dark Man X. But what a lot of people may or may not realize is he actually got that nickname from his boys from pounding away on a DMX drum machine. That's where that name initially came from. And he was always pounding the shit out of that DMX drum machine. And they said, yo, that's DMX. And then he turned it into Dark Man X so it would stand for something. So really interesting. But I want to ask you, both of you, actually, as members of the hip hop community, Tid, your album is pending. But I want to ask you both. Obviously, the news that hit us hard last week about his passing, tragic. Dan, you and the guys from Monolith, every time I'm with you, y'all have the same fucking argument. Who's the greatest of all time? So where does DMX sit in the pantheon of hip hop?
You first.
You're going to make me go first?
Yeah, you go first. Well,
here's the thing. I'm not going to be one of those guys who are going to, like, you know, change up my historical view on DMX, because I wasn't really a big fan of his music. So my answer to that comes from a place of deep respect. DMX, in my opinion, stands alone in a category of a certain lyrical delivery, a sound. He made barking part of bars. He made ad libs just as important as the lyrics themselves. There are other artists who've played with that, but his voice and style was so distinct that he was one of the few artists in hip hop history that if you tried to sound like him, you were automatically a biter. You can't copy DMX's style because it's so in its own lane. It belongs to him. People like Busta, there's artists like that who have established almost their own genre of hip hop. So I was listening to Busta the other day. I was like, only Busta can rhyme on this. And DMX is in that category of he can only he can do this record. You know, the way that he does. So it's like he was iconic because he didn't. It's not just a voice, not just the delivery, but he stood for something. And I respect it's artists like Tupac. I felt the same way about I gained a respect for him after his passing. I will admit, you know, I wasn't bumping him before passing. And I feel that's somewhat unfortunate on my part. But now the more I learn about DMX over the past couple of weeks is how much of his heart was in his music. Yeah. He had stopped performances of his to pray with his audience. I mean, really powerful, powerful stuff came from this guy. And then you just go and watch his interviews and you see how much love he had. And so as far as the pantheon of hip hop and where he belongs, he's in a class of his own. He will be forever remembered as a legend because there can only be one. He's literally, this is not just one of those sentences people say when a guy dies. He's literally one of those guys that cannot and will never be replaced.
So Juice, Dan didn't answer the question. How about you? Can you answer the question? Because Dan just bullshitted for two.
What? I thought it was a great answer. Okay.
Where does he rank in the pantheon of hip hop?
Out of 10, or what do you mean? Like,
I don't know, 372.
Like,
if there was a hip hop hall of fame, is he in it?
Okay, absolutely, man. Okay. Absolutely, 100,000%, man.
Yeah, like everything I said didn't mean that.
No. I think that he is an absolute legend. I think he is kind of, I don't want to say this because people are going to get it wrong, but in my head, it just came to me. I'm going to say it anyway. He reminds me of like Prince in a way, not as an, you know, because Prince played like 1,000 instruments and he was so musically inclined. I don't mean like that, but every artist or a celebrity, they had like this kind of love and admiration and a story to tell about when they met DMX and what he did. And he was like this figure for a while, you know what I'm saying? Like after he disappeared and we all knew the antics with the drugs and, you know, like all of that stuff and how that hurt him. But it was always this talk, like if you listen to like, I don't know, Drink Champs or stuff, they would tell stories about how cool DMX is and how he had his dog come in and like drop. He'd be barking in between his freestyles and it would be on the beat and stuff like that. And just very cool stories, right? That just put him in this ranking of like, you wanted to meet this person. Like you wanted to meet the real DMX and the person that he betrayed, the gangster image. It was, everybody said, nobody could deny how true it was, but everybody would always talk about his humility. Right. And how humble of a guy he was and how much he helped people, how much he actually loved people. Right. Like how big his heart was in a lot of ways, man. You know what I mean? Like he was still that guy that might rob you and steal and stuff like that. But when it came to his family, he was like a dog. He was loyal as a dog to the people that he was with. Right. So, you know, I think he was one of the realest to ever do it. His story was real. And I just love the fact that he was able to take this hard exterior kind of in the way Biggie did, right? When Puffy came along and he was, you know, Biggie was really just on the grimy underground vibes. And then Swiss Beatz kind of came along and spoon fed him these like more poppy, energetic, brighter beats, right? And the blending of that just anger and hood mentality with these bright, bouncy type of beats is merged and just blew up and just, you know, did what white kids in the suburbs felt when they heard like N.W.A. You know what I'm saying? And then, or when the masses heard Biggie for the first time, you heard Juicy, and it was just this blend of soul with these hard lyrics on top of it, right? He was able to do that in a real way, and the numbers don't lie. You have 5 albums in a row that I don't remember the exact numbers, but they're all the way up there, right? They're one of the top selling albums.
Yeah, man.
Of hip hop. And he was dropping records at an alarming rate. He dropped 2 albums in a year at a time when nobody was doing that.
His debut. Right? So, back to back.
So And he brought the East Coast back. I'm not done. He brought the East Coast back. This is at a time when Snoop and Dre and the West Coast was just at their peak, right? And there was no traces of East Coast. It kind of got played out in a way, you know, to the masses. And then this DMX came with this black and white video, and it was so gritty and grimy. And, you know, Def Jam was show. Who knows what they're at? They were probably hurting at the time. Right. And so he just brought one man, took a whole coast on his back, man, and brought it all the way back. And I think he's amazing.
So about a month or so ago, I don't remember the exact date, guys, we interviewed heavy metal rock star Joey Arena. And we talked about how within the world of rock, there are so many musical subgenres. Right. Alternative rock is different from classic rock. Classic rock is different from grunge rock. Grunge rock is different from, you know, synth pop. There's all these different variations. And a lot of times, and I know some people get real picky with this too, but a lot of times hip hop just cuts called hip hop. So when you talk about the greatest in hip hop, it sometimes gets diluted. Like, I've always looked at DMX like hip hop, right? The guy was making pop music, as far as I'm concerned, with a hip hop flavor. To me, that's what it was. And when you talk about that hip hop, he's one of the best, because the only way to gauge that sound is record sales. You can't gauge it in any other critical way, because if you try to, you're going to blow your brains out. But if you just judge it based on what did he put in the bank, there's not a lot of people that beat him. So to me, that's his legacy. That's his
legacy. But he was also in freestyle cyphers. You listen to, you know, It's Dark and Hell Is Hot, that is a hip hop album. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Like, but that's not where he made his money.
No, but he did. Well, I mean, sure. Where My Dog's At was on that, right? So at the same time. But for me, it's a balance, right? Because I grew up, you know, listening to Wu-Tang and a lot of underground MCs, right? But I would also listen to pop music and dance music and everything else, right? So I was always blending the two. I was never stuck in one genre. Like, I grew, like, my dad was a big music lover. We grew up on reggae, you know what I mean? I was born in Jane Finch Hospital, raised in Rexdale, and then ended up moving to Woodbridge, you know what I'm saying? And then going to school with Italians and I-Rocks and
not
and
Italians.
You know, like, you know, I had a very culture shock in my high school, but I think I learned a lot, you know, dealing with different cultures, right? Like, so I think I blended it too. And I think the best artists are able to do that. And a lot of people try to do that, but a lot of people can't do that authentically.
I wanted to ask how you pull it off, bro, because something that I definitely notice about your music is you seem to have this seamless ability to transition from like golden era boom bap styles, like Grateful's maybe my favorite Rochester record. And you do your version of like some of the more modern day, almost trappish style, and you're able to pull them off. And this is the thing about you that I really respect. I want to ask you about your songwriting process, because there are artists that I find try, you know what I'm saying? They try to do a style that doesn't belong to them. It sounds inauthentic. It doesn't work for them. You know, in the 90s, it was when Real MC started doing R&B records. Like, that was the shameful thing. But you have been able to masterfully, in my opinion, pull off both. And you're talking about your musical influences. So where does that come from, where you can do both? You can experiment and still make a hot record? Because I get asked about my songwriting process a lot. So how do you go about your choice of beats and how you know how you're going to flow on a record? Because you're able to bounce around a little bit. And
I don't know if it's a good thing. I mean, I thank you. Thank you so much. Sometimes I want to, I don't know, man. It becomes a double-edged sword a little bit, because I love everything to a point. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love not everything, but I love music. Right. I love good music, and I don't care what genre it is. Right. I can listen to a pop song and enjoy it. I can listen to the most underground hip hop song and enjoy it. Right. Like, because I can find the love in the song, because I just love music. And I remember, like, my cousin Sean, rest in peace, man. He came from Jamaica, and he brought a bunch of, like, you know, tapes with him and sound clashes and stuff like that. And I remember listening to it, and of course there'd be the dancehall, the Bujus and the Bounties and all of that stuff. But then they would be playing like Celine Dion records, and they'd be dropping gunshots to that, right? And people would be slow jamming and whining to, like, you know, the Titanic song or something like that, right?
Wow. And I would love to see that at a Clash.
Yo, don't get it twisted, right? There was a lot of love for like country records. And they make dubs with it, right? And if you listen to a lot of like the earlier reggae stuff, man, they were taking from these country songs, a lot of country songs they were flipping to reggae, yeah. right? Yeah. So like I learned then that like, you know, the genre is one thing, but it's what you bring to the table that makes it really special, man. So don't judge the book by its cover or whatever. Just bring some flavor to it and just enjoy the music, man. I think especially in Toronto back in them days, we tried to put ourselves, there was a box that we felt like we had to be in, and anything outside of that would be kind of a problem. You know what I'm saying? True. It would be something that we're not used to. And I never really subscribed to that, man, just because maybe it was just moving, having that culture shock and going to Woodbridge and seeing how different people rocked and interacting with it and finding the love in it. You know what I'm saying? So, and I've traveled outside of Toronto. I've been to a lot of places around the world, right? And it's not just always this one style of hip hop, right? And I've been to raves and I've had fun. You know what I'm saying? I've done a different thing. So I take a lot of that and I put it into my music, man. And also a lot of these records that you might hear, yeah, they might hit the nail on the head, but I'm not afraid to try. You don't want to hear the whack stuff that I put that doesn't work. You know what I'm saying? But I try and find a blending of the two. And then when it hits, it just feels good, man.
So don't be afraid.
That's it.
I was going to ask you something, but when you mentioned having fun at raves, I thought I saw a glint of hatred in Tid's eyes. I remember when Tid used to be a bouncer at after our raves, and he would look at people at 5 a.m. and go the fuck home, 15-year-olds. You know, like, I'm done. Yeah, get off your fucking ecstasy. I want to sleep. Man wants some food. But that being said, you talked about hip hop and people needing to fit into a box. And there's almost always been in hip hop, maybe more so than any other musical genre, there's been a fear to stand out in different ways, right? And if you do stand out, you're going to get clowned. You're going to get this, you're going to get that. Whether the standing out is your physical appearance, whether it's your sound, whether it's your lyrics, you know, your subject matter, whatever it is. And I think that hurt the hip hop genre for a big period of time in the 2000s and the 2010s, where everyone was kind of doing the same fucking thing because they were all afraid to step out of the box. Yeah. So my question is, based on that theory, what's your feeling of a guy like Lil Nas X?
Ooh, wow. Well, I don't fuck with all the other stuff that he's doing, man, but I've heard his story, right? Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of the things that he had to go through to get where he was, right? And I think that I don't agree with it. You know what I'm saying? I can't say that I do. But I'm not hating on it either, man, because he's not unafraid. And I think when you're fearless with your music, people, they're gonna hate it, they're gonna love it, but they're going to respect it. You know what I'm saying? Even if they don't like it, if you're doing numbers out here and you're doing your thing and you're not hurting anybody per se, you know what I'm saying? You got to respect that, man, because it's good music is good music. And I feel like if millions of people are resonating with what he's saying, then who am I to tell him that he's not making something good, right? Because
go ahead, Tim.
I was just gonna ask, but how important is the creative control to you as the artist when it comes time to present that product to the masses, so to speak? So when the producer of the video says, hey, I have a concept that I want to do for this video, you know what I mean? And you're, as the artist, you've got the concept for the song and what it's saying, and they're completely, you know, different. You know what I'm saying? Like, how hard is that to handle sometimes, right? Like, which side do you go with?
No, you're right. But I think, you know what? You have to live with the choices that you make, right? As an artist, you have to make choices and stand by them, right? And if they don't work, then you have to live with that. And if that means you have to go back and make something else that's different to show them that you've grown for what you did, Maybe that's a mistake. Maybe this record is a mistake. Maybe he makes millions of dollars, but he is so depressed from making this song that he leaves music or something like that. It's something that you have to live with as an artist. You have, as an artist, you have to make choices, I believe, and stand by those choices, man. Mm-hmm. But we also live in a cancel culture, right? Where people, you know, we're quick to judge and we're quick to get rid of you, right? And I don't really believe that because he's a young kid, man. How he's feeling right now, it might not, he might not feel the same way in 5-10 years, right? He might be a complete, we've watched Murder Mace turn into Pastor Mace in our lifetime, right? Like, we've seen people grow and change, right? So I believe that, you know, like, if you're an artist and you're good at what you do and people love you for who you are, then real fans will grow with you. They're not going to agree with everything you do. Yes. They're not going to agree with it, but they're going to rock with you to the wheels fall off if they really, really love you.
It's not a perfect comparison, but I saw a video clip this past week, and I don't even know why I stumbled across this other than the fact that Dan and I have talked for years and years about how we both loved the original Arsenio Hall show when we were kids. And I came across this clip from the original Arsenio Hall show.
Yeah.
It's a historic moment where Arsenio is introducing the episode. He's talking about what's coming up tonight. And all of a sudden, some dude starts chirping him from the back row of the theater, starts yelling at him, screaming at him. And Arsenio's like, what was that? What was that? And the guy starts saying, why don't you ever have any gay guests? And Arsenio's like, oh, okay. And the crowd starts booing and starts going crazy at this guy. And Arsenio's like, yo, you didn't think I was Johnny Carson. I was going to walk away from this shit, did you? And Arsenio walks up to the back of the building and starts having a conversation with the guys that are saying this. He's like, who you want me to have on the show, man? And he goes, what about Gus Van Sant? He goes, I don't know who the fuck that is, but what? I had Elton John here and he rocked the house, you know? And he's like, well, why don't you have Harvey Feinstein? He's like, when Harvey has something to promote, I'll bring him on the show. I have lots of people on the show that are gay. Just because you don't know they're gay doesn't mean anything, right? He went on this whole rant, and these guys just kept chirping him the whole time, like, nah, you're just homophobic and this and that. And he goes, yo, I'm black. He yells, Arsenio yells at him. He goes, you think I'm going to start profiling people? Bro, I'm the most profiled person in America. I'm the only black host on nighttime television. What are you talking about? Like, you guys don't show up at the Johnny Carson show and start yelling at him. Why don't you have gay guests on the show? And I thought, man, what a fucking, like what a bizarre way to look at everything. And this is like 1987 or something, when, you know,
are you talking about from the fans' perspective or Arsenio's perspective?
I'm talking about from Arsenio to look at it like the way he did back in the late 80s to say, don't call me homophobic. I'm black. Right. Mm. I understand what it means to be marginalized.
Mm.
So I thought that was really interesting. So when I hear a lot of the hate on Lil Nas X, I think it comes from one of two places. People that just say being gay is wrong, or right, people that just say your hate against the church is wrong.
Right.
And to that I say, I never met a gay person in my life who chose to be gay. That's my first thing. You don't choose your race. You don't choose your sexual. Like, my thing is, if you could choose to be gay, why the fuck would you choose it? Because you're the most hated person on the planet. You know what
you
I mean?
You gotta like, want to. Yeah, that's what it is, man. Like, the heart wants what the heart wants, right?
I don't think. Like, and I was more talking about the satanic,
when it comes to like the satanic stuff, I'm like, I was like, I don't know about this.
But the satanic stuff is more of a play. Like, the church doesn't support me. The church hates me.
Right.
So I think it's no different than, you know, someone else standing up and going, I'm going to fucking put down this hate group that doesn't love me.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the way I look at it. It's weird to think of the church as a hate group. But I think that's his message, and it's outside the box, going back to your point.
Well, as I was saying on last week's show, bro, I mean, people seem to keep forgetting that at the end of that last video, he kills the devil. And I think there might be a message in that. It's like, what you consider evil, the epitome of evil, I'm going to take out. And it's this idea that, you know, the evil isn't my actions or my person, the person that I am because, you know, of his sexual orientation. But instead, it's the hate that you consistently spew at me and people like me. Because what I said last week, Juice Bro, was that, you know, I ain't going to hate on the man either, because he's, as a black, young black man and gay man, he's got this double, you know, this double no-no going on in his life. And he's had to, everything he's had to accomplish in life has had to been a climb for him. And the guy's winning. You know what
and
I mean?
He's winning. Yeah.
He's out there winning right now. Winning. So to hate on it is crazy. Even though, as I stated, the music and the video isn't made for me. Yeah. I don't have to be a fan to understand where he's coming from. And I feel like, and I think it's important.
I agree with that.
We're in such a world of hate right now. I just want to get your perspective on how you deal with this as a black man, as an artist, and without question, something we got to get into as a father, because we're dealing with a year of COVID. We're dealing with a year of extreme hate and bigotry thrown all over the news and social media. We're in the midst of the Derek Chauvin trial and another Minneapolis cop killing another young brother. And I stated earlier on today's episode that it gets, I'm paraphrasing myself, overly exhausting to have to not just contend with the consistent murders and the hatred, but the excuse making that is finding a way to vilify the victim and excuse the actions of the perpetrator. How do you deal with, I'm talking about from the perspective of obviously being a black man and as a dad, this is a really, must be a really trying time.
It's a loaded question, man. I mean, it is rough, man. I don't know. It hurts my heart, bro. When I see things like this happen, especially in these days and times, I really felt before George Floyd died that although there was a lot, you know, there's a lot of cop killing and there's a lot of racism and that really never goes away. From the perspective from me and my world and what I saw, I felt like there was change happening. There was more opening up of, you know, people just showing a little bit more love to something that was different, right? Like it's okay if you're different, right? I think we were opening up, like, you know, the Me Too movement and you know, women and all of that stuff. I thought we were in the right trajectory. You know what I'm saying? I didn't say it was perfect. I didn't at all. But I felt like there was some kind of shift happening, you know? And then I don't know that anymore. And I feel maybe that was ignorance on my part because, you know, the more news you watch, the more depressed I get, you know, and the more stories you read, the more you realize that it's still the same thing out there, man. You know, and then you realize that, you know, Canada is a great place, you know what I'm saying, for the most part, but racism still does exist over here. So, I don't know, man. I worry about my son. You know, I made him watch. The Hate U Give last weekend.
Wow.
Right. I made him watch that movie. I sat him down. I said, "Listen, kid, you need to watch it." Right. And I think he's 8 years old now. Right. But I felt like the message in there is something that, you know, any young kid, black or white too, especially black, but, you know, needed to watch, man, and learn that, you know what, be careful, because yes, you have friends out there that aren't the same skin color as you and don't treat you that way, but never forget, this is a wide world and there are people out there. And so arm yourself, you know what I'm saying? Don't lead with hate, but be prepared when it comes and know how to act accordingly, right? That's it, man.
I think that's said more as not just a human, but as a good man, a good father, and most importantly, as an Eagles fan.
Hey.
Of course.
Fly, Eagles, fly, baby.
Because you have to have that certain sense. Am I right? Now, here's my question. Is Jalen Hurts the quarterback this year? And before you answer yes, tell me why.
Yes. One reason, We don't have another choice right now.
Winner by default.
By default, he is the guy. I am still a fan of Carson Wentz, man. I think they did him dirty. Yes.
Dude, you can't do nothing with that O-line. That O-line was murder.
He was set for failure from the beginning, right? And but he's in a better I think he's gonna do well where he is right now. But in terms of the Eagles, man, I feel like Jalen Hurts showed us a lot within that year. He does have talent. And if you set up the right O-line around him, the right pieces around him, he can definitely be the stepping stone of what we need to get another championship, man. I'm not hating on Jalen Hurts at all, man. I start him this year, see how far he gets, find some free agents, you know, and build around that, man.
I agree, man. He's just a stepping stone to a really good draft in the lottery to get a real quarterback.
I you never know, man. Honestly, and when it comes to football, bro, like you got to give the kids a chance. There's a lot.
I agree.
People, you know, there's a lot of quarterbacks out there that we swore were going to be the next Peyton Manning, the next Tom Brady. We had them pegged as the guy, right? And Chiefs quarterback,
shit.
Patrick Mahomes. Yep.
Patrick Mahomes.
Nobody saw him coming. Nobody saw him coming.
Even when you say the next Tom Brady, nobody saw Tom Brady coming.
So don't. Right. When people see that, oh, he's the number one draft pick. Look what he did in college. He's gonna be the guy. Don't subscribe to that, man.
You know right. The NFL is Tom Brady's world till he retires. So fuck all that noise.
Steve Allen was the backup to Jim McMahon. Get that.
Yeah, that's true. Rochester, I want to ask you this before we say goodnight.
Yeah.
Because in the intro, I mentioned.
Thank you for the question, though, man. I never get to talk
about it. Yo, we get together. I get together a very good friend of ours, a professional wrestler, ECW alumni, WWE alumni, the Blue Meanie, also a huge, huge Eagles fan, lives down in Philadelphia and stuff like that. We try to get together at least once a year to go check out an Eagles game together and stuff like that. It's a ton of fun. And plus, one of my best friends is a Dallas fan, and I see him every day, so I get to like rub it in his face how much of a piece of shit he really is. It's fantastic.
There's something about Philadelphia. I just want to talk about the city for a second.
Yeah,
man.
It's a great city.
Like I have a connection with Philadelphia, and I don't know how this happened. Right? I don't know why. I have no family there. I have nothing over there, really. Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, Philly Freeway. You know, when he came out and the way he was spitting, I thought was amazing. Rocky is one of my favorite movies of all time. You know, the Broad Street Bullies on the Philadelphia Flyers and how they could win two championships in a row by just beating everybody's ass down in hockey. I thought that was amazing, right? Donovan McNabb is the reason I became an Eagles fan, and then I never stopped doing it after that. And I just think the way the city is, you know what I'm saying? The way the love for boxing, how many boxers came out of Philly. Right. And there's a lot of things that I just really respect about the city, man. So shout out to Philly, man.
just don't let anyone work you into thinking Pat and Gino's is the best cheesesteak.
Nah, Tony Luke's.
That's for Mars.
Hold on. You know what? I've never been to Philly.
Oh, okay.
Fuck.
All right, we're
going. I've never even been there.
All right, we're going. Donnie's Dime. Let's go.
Yes.
I'm just curious if it's Philly across the board with your sports allegiances.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Definitely not.
He's one of those pick and choosers.
Yeah, I love sports, man. You know what I'm saying? I love the players. I think, you know, I'm a Philly fan. You know, I think in football, it's important you pick a team. You know what I'm saying? But I think in basketball, we've grown where we can respect the brand of the player and what they bring. I think we've evolved a lot past that, you know, like, baseball players, you know what I'm saying? I'm you know, Blue Jays because we watch them win 3 days in a row. Yeah, no, you got to shout them out. But I just recently became a Leafs fan again. I hated the Leafs for a very long time. They've earned my respect back. I felt like we, as Toronto sports fans, just gave them so, put them on this pedestal that I didn't think they deserved to be.
Yeah,
much like the people in Dallas put the Cowboys on a pedestal that they don't deserve to be on right now, right? So I wasn't going to give my love to a city that a team that didn't deserve it. But now, yes, Maple Leafs all day.
Okay. So what you're saying is you're a bandwagon jumper. That's what you're saying.
No.
As long as you're winning, you're down. That's what you're saying. And I don't want to be two-faced here, Juice, but I got to be honest. I'm the guy that usually calls mans out when they say, I'm a fan of a team, but I ain't never been to that city. So I'm going to say right now, if this COVID shit ends and you don't make a trip to Philly, I'm getting Tid, all 6'5", 300 pounds of him, to show up at your crib and pull your Philly card. You need to get to Philly. Okay?
That challenge accepted. Challenge accepted.
Now, before we say goodnight, I want to ask you this question because and we'll just make this quick because you're probably not going to give me an answer anyways. Yeah, I mentioned in the intro a bunch of real big names in the music industry that you've rocked with, that you've toured with, that you've performed with. So two-part question. One, did Chris Brown ever pee on you? And part two, what was the moment, if any, of any famous hip-hop artist, musician, whatever, that you looked at and go, this guy don't give a fuck about nothing. This guy is on a different level than me because he operates in a way where he doesn't care about shit.
Wow. Well, I think the best artists out there, they have to get to that point to get where you need to go.
Sure.
No, Chris Brown did not pee on me.
I don't even know where I'm disappointed.
He's actually really cool. I don't know, man. man, I've met so many artists. I mean, the ones that just didn't care in a good way.
Not necessarily a good way. They could have been an asshole. Like, yo, what are you doing? Man. Why are you trying to talk to me? Get out of here.
I've never really. Oh, Future did that. Future did that. I met him in Dubai very quickly. And until I mentioned that I actually worked until I mentioned that I worked with Drake, I got his head turned a little bit. In all fairness, it was a really crazy party that he probably shouldn't have been at. Not crazy in the sense that it was wild, but it was like a lot of just people who just really had a lot of money and said that they wanted to hang with Future. You know what I mean? And said that they were at a party with Future that really probably never even heard any of his music. So anybody who came up to him, he was just trying to get a bag and say, yo, you want a picture? It's going to be $500 or something like that, right? So when you approach him and I talked to him, I said, I'm an artist as well. He kind of brushed me because he was just looking for the bag, you know. I met Kanye, opening for Kanye, and this is College Dropout Kanye. I met him like 3 times now. And I remember being so ecstatic to open up for this guy and getting a chance to go to his backstage and shake his hand and talk to him. And I was like, yo, Kanye, I'm such a big fan. I don't think he knew I was opening up for him at all. So I was like, yo, I had a freestyle I did over Overnight Celebrity that I just came off of a national tour across the whole country. And I was killing that. When that freestyle came on, girls were jumping up. Like, Overnight Celebrity was so like his hottest record at the time. And I was like, yo, I just letting you know that I'd like to do this record. And he just looked at me like he was looking right. Like, I was just not there. Like, he was looking just over there.
Wow.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was like, I'm still here, right? Like, I exist, don't I? And he shook my hand and he just said, nice to meet you, duh. Nice to meet you, duh.
So for those keeping track at home, Kanye, not very personable, and Future. I mean, I love Future, man. When he was hosting the battles at the Shelter on 8 Mile, I was like, yo, this guy's got it. Like, he's got a future in this business. Dan, you want to get the last word?
Yeah, we definitely can't let you go without talking about this, man. I know that we share some things in common, like being MCs from Toronto, but I know that the thing that you're probably most proud of is the thing that I'm most proud of, and that's being a dad. And arguably, you tell me your most important project, probably your most recent one. The Broken Toy Joint just dropped, and it's all about this Broken Toy Initiative. Could you tell us about Alyssa's story a little bit and how people can not just peep the joint Broken Toy, but support the Broken Toy Initiative and all about Safe Haven and what you're trying to do with them?
Absolutely, man. So for everybody out there, my daughter has cerebral palsy. She was diagnosed with cerebral palsy at 6 months, right? I was a young artist coming up, my first child, didn't know anything about being a father. And then when that happened, it kind of rocked all of our worlds. She's in a, long story short, she's in a great place right now, you know? And I think that's all because of the help that she's had, you know, with our, I got to shout out Canada and our system of helping, you know, like special needs children, right? Because without their help, I don't think we'd be in the place where we are right now, right? So she's 16 years old, and I see her thriving in this world. And I wanted to tell her story and our story a little bit, and just maybe not in a sad sense, but just maybe to inspire somebody to show that we can all get through this, right? We can all get through this, especially now, because I know what the pandemic is doing globally to everybody. And I know that our feelings and anxiety is all the way up. My friend Dre just told me he's got a homie that's a therapist, and he's making more money than he's ever had in his life right now because anxiety is all the way up, man, right? So I felt like this was a good time to tell maybe a heartwarming story and her story, and also give back, right, to all these places that helped her out over the year, because they need funding as well, right? They all do. And hopefully spread the awareness that any other parent with special needs might not know about, might not be able to get the help that she's getting, or just they're unaware of it, right? So if I could give back and share, I wanted to do that. And I, listen, man, hip hop is like, it's kind of a selfish thing. We talk our story, we talk our shit, we spit our confidence, you know what I'm saying? And I've been doing that, and I'm like, this time around, let me do something as selfless as I can, right? Nice. Do something that's gonna help out everybody else, man, and see what I could do. So we have the initiative set up. Our goal is to reach $5,000. It's not a lot, but for them, it's gonna go so much further. Safe Haven is a respite, and what it does is, like, any kid who a parent who has a child with special needs can bring them there. It's fully furnished. They got toys. They bring in band members. All kinds of fun happens over there, and they can spend the night and maybe just, you know, get a break, man. Get a break as a parent, you know, like, do what you need to do, right? Yeah. Have a date night, you know what I'm saying? And be free, man, and know that your child is going to be okay and get some of that sanity back. You know, so so this year is Safe Haven. Next year, there'll be another company that's helping out special needs, that helped out Alyssa and special needs children. Okay. And hopefully we'll just build it and build it and build it and build it. So you can get that. You can get that on my Instagram. You can donate on there. Please go to @RochesterJuice on Instagram, man. The link is in the bio, and you can just donate there, man. And I'm going to start a telethon. I haven't done the date yet, but I'd love for everybody to just hop on the IG, you know what I'm saying, and just help me spread some awareness and help us get to that $5,000.
So 100%.
We'll push that for you, man. Thank you so much. And I just want to throw out, as we say goodnight, when I do release finally my own hip hop album, I'm gonna strongly consider changing my name to Da Silva, aka Beer. Hey. I'm not settled on it. Creative differences. Horsetooth Killer is still a working name.
You would get way more street cred though, Donnie, if you went with Drank. Drank.
Listen, I don't need too many chefs in my creative kitchen. All right, y'all can fuck off and just wait for me to spit that soft 16.
I can't wait for that soft 16.
Yeah, bro. For 16.
Juice,
decades.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us, man. Sorry it ran.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for hanging out.
So much fun, man. Thank you.
Amazing.
Guys.
All right, wicked. All That's right. Rochester, aka Juice. Check him out on his socials. You know how he does it, and you know, check out his music. You know where to get it. 100%. Everywhere you get all your music. Tid, Dan, we are running late, man. So unless you got something good to say, we are going to wrap this shit up.
really quickly, I want to send a shout out to Crave, Crave Banquet Hall in Scarborough for accepting donations on behalf of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. Wherever you are in this world, please recognize that this very small Caribbean country just experienced a volcanic eruption. It's not headline news, but there are people who are displaced and ash all over the place. And, you know, so I was donating the other day, and I just want to put that out there that they need your help. And if you can help, please do.
I was around in 1980 when Mount St. Helens erupted and sent ash that went all around the entire world. So I am all too familiar with what kind of devastation that can have on where you're living. I was living in Washington State at the time, just outside of Spokane, when that happened. So, like, please give to these people. They need it. They're stuck on an island. And this is definitely one of those times where you need to come together. I know that UNICEF is very much involved in this. So, you know what I mean? There's local places. Look them out. Go see them.
There was a car fire in the underground parking lot of the condo where I live this past weekend.
Was it your car?
And the ash from that was annoying. So I can only imagine.
That's legit.
The ash from a volcano would be fucking disastrous. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. This is episode 51. We are done this party. Thanks to our guest, Rochester, a.k.a. Juice. That's the Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell. That's your bro, Danny O. I am Da Silva, a.k.a. Beer. And we'll see you next time.